Joining us now, 25th Congressional District, Congressman Joe Morelli. I can't remember, I think there's a time after Voice of the Voter last year when you were running for the 25th Congressional District, we saw each other, but I can't remember when that was. Thanks for joining us on WDKX. How are you?
I'm great, Drew. Thank you. Thanks so much for inviting me here.
A couple of different things. Okay, this report comes out, 25th Congressional District, second worst for African Americans in the country. Did you know that? Did you have any stats prior to that? Did you know about the study, or did the news get in touch with you first?
Well, I didn't know about the study. I don't know much about the authors of the study, but what we did know, and of course this is the important thing, is the state of living conditions for African Americans and people of color in Rochester, which has, you know, we've known to be among the worst in the country. We have some of the most concentrated extreme poverty in the United States, and we have some of the highest child poverty rates in the United States. And it's hard to imagine, you know, whenever I would be in Albany when I was in the state legislature in particular, people would say, you come from Rochester, everything's great there.
Mm-hmm.
So like, well, what do you mean everything's great here? Well, you got Kodak, you got Xerox, you got Bausch & Lomb. I was like, well, first of all, they're facing enormous challenges. This was just a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And but more importantly, even a place that at its height had great wealth, it wasn't shared by everyone. Mm-hmm. And you sort of see this in what's going on in the United States now, where you have this huge income inequality gap, and it continues to grow. And for people of color, it's far more extreme than it is for others. So we knew we had challenges. I think the good news, if there's good news in the report, is it should serve as a further call to action for folks in this community about what we need to do to improve the lot of people living in poverty, and we have far too many.
Joe Morelli joins us now. Now, the study was done, I think, 2017.
Yeah.
You were not in office at the time. As a matter of fact, we were just talking off air about the Voice of the Voter debate with XXI, with Dr. Maxwell last year. So here you are coming in, unfortunate loss of Louise Slaughter, opening, you run, you win. So you've been on the job how long now?
Well, I took my oath of office just a week after Election Day because I finished the last 5 weeks of Louise's term. So I've been in office about 9 months, a little more than 9 months.
So 9 months on the job. So this report comes out 2017 and releases all of this information. How important is it that this updated information now come out? Here we are leaving 2019, going into 2020. The census, all the information that comes out that people either put in or don't put in, how does that weigh into these reports?
Well, look, I think, you know, capturing data, which sounds very sort of technical and very cold, but gathering data and measuring data is really important because it helps to measure whether we're having an impact in a positive way or whether or not we're regressing further. So I think if you look at this data point, and as you mentioned, really important, the 2020 census, we'll be able to continue to look at whether we're making progress. But no matter what, the progress we are making, and I believe we are making some. I'm working with the mayor on a number of initiatives, and I think we're making progress. But I think she and I would both agree that the progress is just far too slow, and we're losing. Think about in the city school district. I don't want to sidetrack us here, but mm-hmm. when we start, in a sense, boasting about 57% of the kids are graduating, it sort of ignores the fact that, first of all, that means 43% of the kids aren't, which is a huge number. It means we're losing thousands of children. And if you can't finish 12th grade, your chance of being successful in this day and age are just, you know, obviously you can be, and lack of education, lack of resources doesn't condemn you, but it certainly makes the climb that much steeper. So that's sort of become an article of faith that you have to at least have a high school education. Nowadays, you know, really wanting kids to have at least an associate's degree or further. But if you take comfort in that, it ignores the fact that 43% of the kids aren't successful, and it also ignores the fact that we're lessening standards in order to increase the numbers. So that's not helpful, right? More and more kids are getting local mm-hmm. instead of regions diplomas. And the most startling fact of all is of the kids that graduate from the city school district, 40% of them end up at MCC, mm-hmm. which is a great school.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that number, virtually all, about 96%, are not ready to take credit courses that they need remediation. So we have so far to go. And if we don't, you know, look at this as the number one priority in this community, then I think we're doing a disservice to these families and to these children. I spend more time on this than any other thing I spend time on.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, it's part of this study. We talk a bit about poverty. We talk a little bit about education. We talk a bit about that. And with so many, you know, high institutions of higher learning in the area, there is an educational field here, but it's at the higher level, mm-hmm. not at the lower level. Now, you do see things, successful stories, U of R coming over to East and proving that as well. So how do we get to that level before we get to jobs? Because I know a lot of issues have to do with education and working together with the district and the mayor with Congress to make this all a working machine.
Right. So I think I'm glad you pointed out what's happened at East High School, because Sean Nelms and the folks there are doing an amazing job. And that partnership with the University of Rochester should be one we look to recreate, whether it's with the university or whether it's with the other higher education partners we have in town. And we are blessed. We have Rochester Institute of Technology. We have Nazareth, St. John Fisher, Geneseo, Brockport. The list goes on and on. Roberts Wesleyan. So there's a lot of great schools. Many of them, I think, would be willing to partner in the way that the University of Rochester has at East High. The other thing that's going on at East High, which is really important, is that they're looking at an entire child instead of just what happens to that child in the classroom. Mm. And so what's really important about this is, if you're a classroom teacher, I am married to a woman who just retired a couple of years ago from teaching after 30 years in both the city and East Irondequoit. And what she would know about what's going on with children in the classroom would be only what she would see. She didn't know what else was going on. I tell a story, and maybe listeners have heard me tell it, but it's important. A few years ago, my wife, who taught 7th and 8th grade, comes home. She had been talking about this young African-American student that she had named Dasani. And Dasani, she had always said, I love this kid. He's smart. He's funny. But there's clearly challenges in Dasani's life. Mm. So she comes home near the end of the school year and said, Dasani got suspended from school today. And she was troubled by it. I said, what happened? She said, well, he got in a fight with some of his fellow classmates. Mm-hmm. There was some pushing and shoving, and he got pulled out and got suspended. I said, well, why? What was the dispute about? She said they were teasing him because he's been sleeping on the playground and occasionally gets inside the school building, sleeps, and they'll find him in the classroom in the morning. Mm-hmm. I said, why? She said, well, because his mom has had a mental health episode because his older brother, who my wife had also taught, mm-hmm. had been killed in a gang-related shooting. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, what's going to happen to him? She said, Child Protective took over, and I don't know. She said, never saw him again. Hmm. Now, the thing about this, you know, you don't want to take too much from one story or one anecdote, but this happens thousands and thousands of times during the course of a few years. Dasani should have been in school, first of all. That was the best place for him, so suspending him made no sense.
Yeah.
But the fact is, you know, you have a lot of adults who touch his life and his mom's life, and they're not connected in any way.
Do they have the resources they need, Joe?
They have the resource in the sense that I think what goes on in the classroom, look, the city school district has a budget now, nearly $1 billion. Mm-hmm. They have 27,000 students. So if you do the math, you think, well, that's a fair amount of resource. Is there enough? Probably not for the challenges some of these kids face. But what you know is that there are enough resources perhaps touching that child's life, but not in a coordinated or connected way. So you see a health professional, and maybe the child has developmental issues or behavioral issues mm-hmm. or mental health issues. But does that person ever then talk to a classroom teacher or school psychologist or principal? We're doing some work about trying to connect all of these things and make them fuller and more textured as it relates to a child and his or her family's life. And so we're down at school 19. I wasn't there, but the folks I'm working with there. A four-year-old boy gets brought to the principal's office. Mm-hmm. And the principal overhears, as a social worker or something, they ask the four-year-old, mind you, who's in nursery school, do you know why you're here? And he was here for a different reason. He's been brought in for a different reason. He says to them, yeah, my mom died last night. Mm. Found out the mom hadn't died, but the four-year-old thought that his mom had died. Mm. The miracle of it, he still managed to get up and go to school in the morning. That's how, you know, he knows to go to school.
The routine. He had a routine to do.
Yeah. And his mom had a serious health condition the night before. Emergency had come. An ambulance had come. But no one had informed the school, so the teachers and the principal weren't prepared to deal with whatever trauma he was facing the next morning. It just happened by accident, they found out about it. And it so happened the people that I'm engaged in an effort to try to bring this all together happen to be at the school interviewing some people. So it's a disconnected, you know, when I say what we have in Rochester or throughout the United States as a system of supports is an insult to systems.
I want to take a quick break, not just on that story, but on a sense stuff. Do we have the resources? They're just not communicating. Was that what you're trying to say, Joe, that we have this. No one's communicating to get to the child that needs this.
Correct. Okay. And to their family and to adults who may be in crisis, not just children, although there's a more of a focus on children because, you know, obviously there's a crisis there, but there's a crisis everywhere. So, yes, I think that's a big part of it.
Coming up in a matter of moments, we've got to talk a bit. I've seen you last time your name was mentioned. We were here with Willie Lightfoot. Mm-hmm. Willie Lightfoot was talking a bit about what you're very proactive about guns. Mm-hmm. You're very big into this. I want to bring that national debate coming in. And then what do we plan on doing to make the 25th Congressional District from this point on
right.
not the way it is to when it comes for African-Americans in this district? We're WDKX. We're 103.9 WDKX. 25th Congressional District, Congressman Joe Morelli joins us now here in studio as we start on the issue this morning. What brings Joe in? A number of different things. Number one, you're everywhere. We'll talk guns in a matter of moments, but the study that came out, I wanted to give a chance for you to sort of address this issue of the second worst place to live in your district that you run now, according to a study done in 2017. Before we get into guns, I want to ask about jobs and opportunity. I think a lot of people would ask, okay, we have poverty, we have issues with that. What is the 25th Congressional District doing with jobs and employment, specifically in the city?
So it's a great question because so many people say, well, if we just had jobs for folks, everything would work out and be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. Mm-hmm. It just skips several steps, which is if you don't have the technical skills to take a job that's mm-hmm. available, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't address, more broadly speaking, structural racism in this community and still how it affects people, that's an issue. There are a whole issue of soft, what we call soft issues around employment, which is just deals with work ethic and things like that. So what you have in Rochester and Monroe County is, and I'm sure this is repeated in other places, but obviously my focus is here. We have somewhere, and there's different estimates, somewhere between 10,000 and 13,000 what they call middle skills jobs available in Rochester. And those skills are people who have either an associate's degree or some kind of certificate program after high school. 13,000, let's say it's even at the lower end, 10,000. And yet we have all these folks who want to work who can't get those jobs. Every week I'm at employers. Last week I was at a food processing plant. The week before at an optics place. I've been at International Paper. Everywhere I go and I try to check in with as many people, I ask them, what's the number one problem you have in this region?
Mm-hmm.
They say finding qualified workers.
That's what
every
they say.
Every single one. And I say, well, why we have that when we have all these young people and people in transition who are young at heart who are going from a career to a different career or whose job has changed because mm-hmm. of technology, because of robotics, because of AI, because of productivity. Why can't we connect these things? So one of the things that I want to do later this fall is to bring some of that employer community together with those folks who are running employment programs to find out what's the disconnect. Where are we failing to connect people in an appropriate way? It is a key. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you have a steady income coming in, you're going to be able to deal with a whole host of your own problems. You're not going to need government to provide that service.
So you're talking institutional racism that you see. You've seen it and actually experienced it for your own self.
And you see it around hiring. I've heard many stories of folks who'll say, you know, I did phone interviews and was highly recommended, mm-hmm. highly considered. Then mm-hmm. I go for the in-person interview. But there's more subtlety, yeah, and then didn't get the job because, oh, wait a second. I think there's a lot of it. And look, I think, speaking as someone who obviously didn't grow up in a family of color, it's easy to ignore things because we don't see them. If you're white, you don't see these prejudices. So you mm-hmm. don't even the subtle things that happen, we don't see. So we're shocked. We say, well, this, you know, in the 21st century, racism doesn't exist. But boy, I mean, there's so many, so much evidence of it still that if we don't confront it, if the entire nation doesn't essentially at some point say, look, we've got to do something. First of all, acknowledge that it's a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's a persistent problem. And secondly, that we're going to make a national effort to eradicate it. But what do we see instead? We see the rise of hate groups. We see the rise of supremacists. We see the rise of anti-Semitism. These are very, very, very troubling. I don't want to get into, you know, national politics. The focus is on our community here. But, you know, when the president of the United States engages in behavior that's not only erratic and sort of crazy, but also gives license to people who harbor this hatred, then I don't know why we expect a different outcome than we're seeing right now, which is this problem is growing, not getting better.
WDKX Wake Up Club. We'll get to the top of the hour. More with Joe Morelli coming up next. WDKX Wake Up Club. We'll talk guns. Opioid crisis is a huge issue as well. And then back to sort of getting to this discussion, you mentioned something I thought was interesting on how you see it. But yet you have people that are in the same profession, politics and business. They don't see it. Is it because you're out more? Or that you care more, or is it like what was?
Or they choose not to see.
Yeah, is it? I don't understand how you see it and understand it, and people you may know or see don't see it.
Well, I think you know. I don't know that I have any special sensitivity to it. I do know this. I think you know. Someone said to me once, you know, you can't learn anything while you're talking, and I took that to mean you know sometimes you got to listen more, and I try all the time to listen to people. I think people. In my line of work, are expected to have all the answers, but of course, no one can have all the answers. Right. You can only get information if you're listening to people. So, I try very hard to listen. I try to observe, and I try to. You know, we're all products of our own lived experience. Mm-hmm. So, I lived my life in a very working class neighborhood. I still live in that neighborhood, but I don't have the same lived experience as other friends or other folks. One of my closest friends. Is Wade Norwood. Wade will share with me things that he learned in his life. That's important to me. And I talked to a whole host of other folks who've had to deal with either structural racism, who've grown up in abject poverty in many cases. Some of them have had success dealing with it, some not. You have to learn from those lessons. But I think we as adults, we have great resources in this community, great services. We're very service rich in this community.
Yeah.
But the one thing we don't do is we don't bring it together. It's like we have many silos, many people who talk to folks in around education, around healthcare. But if we don't have the adults who deal with families in crisis together around a table, physically or virtually, talking about how we will all come together, then we're going to continue to have the outcomes we have, which is we're spending a lot of money.
But it's not having.
But just not making much of an impact.
WDKX Water Cooler continues next. 25th Congressional District. When it comes to African Americans, I do know, and I mentioned this before. Willie Lightfoot has been on our show before, and he has mentioned the fact that you're very interested. You were last year running in a campaign. You're very interested in stopping gun violence. Gun violence has become a huge issue. We'll get your thoughts on Red Flag in a minute, but you've done stuff in Irondequoit, and I think you're doing something in the city soon, right?
Yeah, this week, the 28th, which is Wednesday night. I'm never good on my days and dates. I don't know why that is, but the 28th over at Mount Olivet Church on Adams Street, we're having a town hall on gun violence, and this is something that I started to work on when I was first in the New York State legislature a couple of decades ago when we actually banned assault weapons in New York, but then the federal preemption took it away, that ban away. So we're trying to now do it on a national level. But to have universal background checks, 89% of Americans support the idea of a universal background check for you to buy a firearm, which seems like a logical and thoughtful thing to do. You can't drive a car without a license.
Yeah.
You can't be a school bus driver without getting fingerprinted, having a background check. You can't even be a home health aide without a background check.
Mm.
But yet you can buy a gun without a background check unless you buy it from a federally licensed dealer. And then there's very little connection between the various states. So we need a national universal background check. That bill's passed the House of Representatives. Hasn't passed the United States Senate yet, but has passed the House of Representatives. We need to ban certain military-style assault weapons. We need to limit high-capacity magazines so people can't fire off 20 rounds into a crowd. We need to make sure that we have red flag laws nationally. We just enacted one in the state of New York, but that means people who have a history of domestic violence or people who have are considered by family or friends someone to have a mental disturbance that is puts them in a position to be able to harm themselves or others and refer that. Now, you still go in front of a judge. There's going to be due process. We're not taking anybody's weapons away without a process to go through. But you see these folks who are committing, just massacres on our around this country. And let's face it, most of them clearly have a serious mental health issue. So There's a whole host of things to do.
Now, with, you know, people with these mass shooting issues, but what about the everyday shootings that happen? Like, how do we prevent those guns from getting in the hands of people who don't even go through the process and they're getting them off the streets?
Right. I mean, in some ways, these are parallel and similar but different problems, right? So a lot of what's going on in our urban centers, we were talking earlier offline about what's happening in St. Louis since the beginning of their school year just a few weeks ago. That's driven by poverty. It's driven by drugs. Mm-hmm. It's driven by illicit money. One of the things that I've introduced legislation would be to create minimum standards for every gun dealer and every gun shop in America. So right now, a pharmacy, your CVS is more secure than a gun store in the United States, because you have to secure your drugs at the end of the workday, but you don't have to secure your guns. We saw this last year. Schenapes up in Parma was robbed twice in 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
Twice in 1 week.
Yeah.
Cut a hole in the ceiling, dropped down, stole guns. Their response was put plywood up to cover the hole. And the next week, they came down, sawed through the plywood, dropped back down, and
got
more
guns. Yeah. It has been the one thing I know at the Water Club. I've talked to law enforcement. I've talked to politicians. I've talked to a number of people. They all say that guns are stolen in the suburbs, sold into the city.
Right. So my bill, which would do a number of things, it would double the number of enforcement agents from the alcohol, firearms, and tobacco section of the Department of Justice to begin to start doing annual inspections for troubled gun shops that have a history of putting guns on the streets. It would require minimum standards. It would require locking guns away every night. It requires a report to law enforcement when you have guns stolen. Sometimes gun owners don't even let law enforcement know that they've had guns stolen.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you're right, they end up on city streets. And a lot of these guns are coming from the South, where the rules are much more lax. And they know that they have challenges in the North. So we've become an acceptor state of illegal guns.
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah.
I've never heard of guns coming from the South being sold up here because...
Well, you can...
Because we have more stringent gun laws.
Yeah, but this is what we were talking about before on the water cooler. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, like, the laws that we have, we just have to enforce them. Because if I live here in Rochester and I go down South, I buy a gun that maybe has been altered or modified and bring it back up here, what's to stop me?
Yeah,
you go to a place that doesn't have a universal background check.
Right.
You have, I mean, so that's why we need a national approach to this instead of state by state. I mean, can the states have even higher standards? Yeah, I'm for that. That's fine. But you have to have minimum standards of safety and security nationally to prevent what's happening, which is people are sort of looking at where are their lax or laws, and then how do I get the guns north?
I want to get a chance for you to repeat, and then we'll do it again before, because I know you got to go. Wednesday, you said Wednesday night, you said it's at Mount Olivet, right on Adams Street, 141 Adams Street.
Correct.
I was just there for a community event on Saturday.
7 o'clock.
What time? Yeah, I was about to say, what
7
time?
7 o'clock. And people should call our office. It's my office is 232-4850. I'm sorry. I had the same number for 30 years.
It's so funny. He says the number, and then he gets a head nod yes in the corner. I'm like, I got the number right. You're 2 for 2 today, all right?
This is my good week. I'm off to a good start.
That's the way you want to start Monday with the right information.
So you can do that just to let us know, because we're trying to just measure how many folks will come in. And people, it's really, I'll talk very little at that about, you know, what we're trying to do at the national level, some of the things that I'm sponsoring and that what we hope to accomplish. But this is really to hear about from the community about what they want to have happen. And Willie Lightfoot's been not only a great friend of mine for many, many years. I served with his dad in the county legislature. So I've known the Lightfoot family for many years. But Willie has been, you know, I think the leader in this community around gun violence and what to do about it. So he's to be commended.
Yeah. I know the huge number of campaigns to try to stop the violence in and around the city of Rochester.
But even with this, going back to what we originally started, that the problem of guns in our city streets and their use goes back to poverty. It goes back to structural racism. It goes back to the sense of helplessness that so many folks have.
Mm-hmm.
They feel this is the way out, which ultimately is not, but... You know, you sort of, when you're hopeless, you don't have much to lose. So you just do whatever you see modeled by other folks.
Now, which brings me to a question that we had Nurse Boak in, who does Conky Cruiser. She has an issue with the opioid crisis that's going on, that's hurt basically little kids riding bikes on Avenue D, you know?
Yeah, the trail over there, the El Camino Trail.
And I know you and a number of different politicians are trying to get a grip on this crisis. It's really a crisis because it has no bounds. It doesn't matter if you live in the suburbs, doesn't matter if you live in a rural area, doesn't matter if you live in the city. But a lot of those needles are ending up on city grounds, and people just don't seem to care to pick them up. So, I mean, is there anything you've sort of looked at that's interested you about the opioid crisis, specifically on Conkey?
Well, I would start here. This is another great indication of where structural racism comes into play, because when heroin was mostly an inner city problem, people's response was, let's change the criminal justice laws and put people in jail. Mm-hmm. Is when it starts spreading everywhere. And now, to your point, it's in rural communities and suburban communities. It knows no socioeconomic boundaries. All of a sudden now it's a we have to have a multifaceted approach, which, by the way, I'm for. It just points out how we see these things differently by who are the victims, right? And now all of a sudden, even the president's talking about mental health services, which, you know, he talks about it and then he won't do anything about it. But the point is, we need a multifaceted approach. This can't be simply a criminal justice response. So we put in the House Democrats, when we did our appropriation bill, we put $501 billion for opioid, $33 billion increase, and we're waiting for the Senate to answer our call for more dollars. But it has to be recovery services. It's got to be residential treatment. It's got to be community-based services. I was over at Rock Recovery Fitness, which is a great organization over on Dewey, where we announced the money for coming out of the House Democratic appropriations bill. And they do wonderful things using physical fitness and getting people to embrace a healthier lifestyle. But this is, again, and unfortunately, the drugs are now so much more deadly. They're being laced with fentanyl, it's gotten to be, to your point, a crisis. And our response cannot be simply, let's get everybody drugs that deal with the after effects of it, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what everybody's sort of focused on. Mm-hmm. And I get it, and that's important to keep people alive. Mm-hmm. But if you are a user and you're saved at, you know, an emergency crisis situation, and then you're back to using 2 days later or later that day, we haven't really done anything to benefit you. So we're going to have to get further upstream in terms of talking, first of all, awareness for young people about the impacts of this stuff, and then working with people, as I've talked about, getting people away from their silos, getting people to start talking. Adults who provide services need to speak to one another. So it's just not, you know, people in healthcare talking to healthcare professionals and educators talking to educators. Right. They have to talk to one another, this cross-sectional conversation about how to get people, because people don't have one problem. I often say this, I don't want to run you out of time here, but if I walked out of the house this morning and my car had a flat tire, I'd be like, I got a flat tire. Somebody call AAA. Mm-hmm. Somebody else will pick me up. Yeah. You know, it's a nuisance for me.
Yeah.
And it might not even be that much of a nuisance. But if you got to take your child to daycare and then get to work,
right,
and you have a tire and you got $20 to your name and you have a flat tire, that's set your whole day off. And more importantly, your child doesn't get to daycare, but maybe this is the third time it's happened to you and your boss gets tired of you and says, okay.
You're done.
Yeah. I mean, so the only reason I use that, you know, just to sort of suggest that folks in poverty live on the edge. They're fragile. They have multiple problems. They have multiple challenges. It's typically not fix one thing, you know. So that's why we have to have a multifaceted approach, both to opioids, which is, again, another symptom of the anguish of people who live under the most difficult circumstances anywhere in this country.
Well, Joe Morelli, I know, thanks for the time today. Appreciated coming in, talking a bit about the 25th Congressional District. What can people expect out of the district going forward, even after this report? What can they expect?
Well, what I'm going to continue to do in working with my partner, and I did want to mention, because a lot of great people, I told you that we meet monthly. Mm-hmm. There's a large group of folks working on how to connect people better. So that includes University of Rochester and the hospital there, Rochester Regional Hospital, Lifespan, Rochester City School District, ABC, Catholic Family Center, you name the group, Food Link. We're all trying to come together and say, how do we start working together so we have better outcomes for young people and older people who are in crisis? How do we move them, not just out of crisis, not just check to make sure you're still poor to get your check every month? Mm-hmm. How do we actually get to the point where people are self-sufficient, where they're thriving, they and their families? And that's what we've got to work toward. And it's not going to be solved today or tomorrow or a year from now, or maybe even 5 years from now. But we got to get going on this, and it's got to be a call to arms, a call to action, and people have to put every amount of energy they can into solving this, or else we're going to end up in a much worse situation in the coming years.
Right. Joe Morelli, 103.9 WDKX. Thank you for the time this morning. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Al. I'm delighted to be here. Anytime you want me back, I'd be happy to come.